Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome, everyone, to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. I'm Nancy Meyer, and today's mentoring session is focused on Mary Hayes Greco. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Nancy.
Mary is the author of Unconditional Forgiveness, a simple and proven method to forgive everyone and everything. And she's also the author of The New Kitchen Mystic. She's the founder and director of the Midwest Institute for Forgiveness Training and has taught people how to forgive for 25 years, including myself. Her work has taken her all over the world. Does that include like your work in Ireland?
Yes, Ireland, Germany, Kuwait, Canada, around the States.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you can connect with her at www.forgivenesstraining.com. She also has another website, maryhayesgreco.com, and we'll have that on the website for you. So, Mary, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me. It's great to see you again.
I know. So, Mary Hayes Greco and I go pretty far back.
Go way back.
I think I took your forgiveness workshop. It was before my brother passed away in 97. So I think it was like in 1996.
That could be.
Yeah. And then I, in turn, helped you with the business planning process with you and your husband, Fred.
Yes.
In 2001.
Yes.
Kind of for that year.
Yes.
So we'll be getting into lots of, you know, reminiscing, but also lots of growth. And I would like to have the audience get to know you more. I just think you're such a fantastic person.
Oh, thank
and
you.
I just appreciate all your contributions. The work that you're doing shifts the person profoundly in a way that's not easy to kind of access for most of us because we get wounded through life. And because of the pace that we're going at, unless we take some time to kind of really reflect, we can really pack down the pain.
We can. And there's not a lot of places to take it where it's going to transform.
Right.
You can sit on the bar stool and chat with your local bartender or you can talk to somebody. But if you don't get all the way through the journey of releasing it, it just kind of waits its next turn.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's always there. It doesn't seem to go away until
right.
we really, you know, take some time to take a look at it.
And sometimes that doesn't happen until someone's struggling with illness or depression or a life crash when they realize, oh my gosh, you know, I have so many stored up griefs and angers in there that I can't go forward. I cannot go forward until I clean house.
Yes. And I felt at the time I was the example in your particular.
I remember that workshop. It was at St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and I remember you were the demonstration. I usually demonstrate the 8 steps process of forgiveness with somebody who volunteers, and you were the girl.
I was like, I don't care if I've got snot all over.
I'm going to have that big ugly cry because I want to be free. I really believe in the ugly cry because,
yeah.
you know, the result afterwards is so satisfying.
It is. And I totally loved my older brother, still do. But I was having difficulty with being connected with him because he had endangered my life in a number of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And on a farm, I mean, there were lots of accidents. I mean,
yeah.
I witnessed him flipping over a tractor and the steering wheel landed on his arm.
Yeah.
And there were just a number of different, I mean, that none of which he had done on purpose. But he was an adventurous person. He was in his teens, so the frontal lobe is not fully formed.
And missing a piece there until they're about 23.
And that workshop helped me to be in a space afterward where I could like connect with him in a way that didn't have anything between us.
Right. It wasn't laced with all this old trauma and all this these fearful memories.
Yeah. And as a result, when he, a year later, was diagnosed with lymphoma cancer and passed away a number of months from that. I was able to be there and give him foot massages, and I
just
don't
love him. Just love the good in him.
Totally.
All out, without any of that old stuff in the way.
Yeah. And so I will always be indebted to you for that experience. It's really amazing. And I think with doing that kind of work, you have to take some time for yourself to kind of recover.
Well, I certainly do, but I use my work for my own life stories, and I feel like I've developed a lot of muscle tone emotionally, so to speak. I'm not really afraid of people's big feelings and their worst pain. I feel like I've faced into my own enough, and I know that not only do you survive it, but you're really glad later that you did. So there was a time when I went through a period for a few years where after every workshop, I just had to sit down and have a huge cry about just human cruelty and the kind of awful things people go through, and especially children with parents or children with adults. And I cried and cried for a few years after each workshop. And then what began to predominate in my experience was my utter confidence that no matter how upset and how hard the person in front of me is crying, what I know is that they're going to get through this. I know this is going to be short. In 25 minutes, you're going to start moving out of this little pit of pain. And in another 20 minutes, you're going to be feeling your soul and you're going to be relaxing your posture. Maybe for the first time in decades, your shoulders are going to relax. Your stomach is going to uncurl. So I guess after a while, I realized, you know what? Bring it on. Just bring it on, because I have not seen any story resist the power of forgiveness once you know how to do it.
Oh.
Not one story, Nancy. I've heard some bad ones.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell my worst stories on your show because they will bum your listeners out. But I promise you, you know, all the horrible, terrible stories that Oprah or Jerry Springer or anybody would feature when they talk about forgiveness, I've heard a few of those. And human beings are amazing. Our souls are so serenely independent of the story, and so capable of giving us the spiritual energy and release and restoration that we need, no matter how big the story is.
Yeah.
So that's what I keep in mind. And I do a lot of self-care, and I take a lot of alone time before and after a workshop to just be in the right space for it. And it's just part of the gig.
Yeah,
it's just part of the gig. The day after the workshop, I'm usually very crabby. And we all know this now. Anyone who lives with me knows this now. And we leave me alone. And I let it pass. I let this little whiplash of negativity just kind of waves through. And then the day after that, I'm a little tired. And the day after that, I'm kind of like moving on. I'm kind of forgetting about it.
Yeah.
So that's just the way it goes.
Sure. And like any new person to the program, our initial sessions, we go through the self-awareness mentoring journal so that you can check in with yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think this would be a good time to let us know. You just filled this out. So how are you feeling?
Oh, you want me to share? Oh, dear. Okay. I thought this was private. Well, here we go. Okay. Well, let's see. I am feeling peaceful, resolved, a little tired, you don't have this word on your inventory, but a little rumpled from just, you know, a little rumpled from a recent deep and important marriage conversation, which we're all right, don't worry, we're going forward, but you know, those are upsetting,
and
but I have a lot of trust in my partner and myself, and we've been together 35 years, and he's really my guy, my soulmate. So, but this is recent. This is like, you know, yesterday. So I feel a little bit like, okay,
yeah.
I think I'm just going to forgive myself soon because I feel a little bit guilty. But I also have some compassion for, you know, just the hard classroom that marriage is for most people.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we're doing well overall. So.
Sure.
I think that's about it. I'm excited about writing. I'm doing a lot of writing right now of my next book. And it's really, really nourishing me. I'm laughing out loud and you know, picking just the right word and going, oh, I love that I just said that. I love that phrase I just used.
Oh, yes.
So I'm kind of I'm very engaged with my writing. And I'm looking forward to getting to my cabin at the end of the week and doing a lot more writing.
Oh, beautiful. Is that your favorite space to write in?
I have two spaces. My office in South Minneapolis is in a lovely paneled room with a fireplace, and it's just really pretty and deep and quiet and peaceful. And I've been there for 15 years, and we've had so much praying and healing going on there that the walls kind of, you know, say om when you walk in, you know. So you must come there sometime. Oh, I love this space. People are just gonna like, I settle in. So yeah, I can write there, and I write at my cabin, which is 80 miles from here in Wisconsin.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's an easy place to get to.
Really
quickly.
Easy to get to, and it's silent. It's very quiet. Nice. I love quiet.
Yeah.
I think it's my favorite thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
So I just had opened the new Kitchen Mystic, and the chapter that I pulled out, speaking of like your love of words and phrases, and the name of the chapter is A Wild Trust. And I love, you know, how you just pop this in. I don't know what I need. I cried out in frustration one day. I was facing one of the great dilemmas for a person with low self-esteem, a positive opportunity.
Oh, yeah. You just hate that when that happens. If you're feeling bad about yourself and life is really trying to lift you up and you have to like try on a different hat about how you're thinking about yourself. That was just before we bought our land. So that would have been 20 years ago I wrote that. So I'm doing better now. Thanks. Yeah. But yeah, I was, we had an opportunity. We had received some money and we were able to like think about what do we want to do next? When it's not just month to month. Do I want to go back to school? Do we want to travel? Do we want to buy a different house? And that's when the universe threw my land at me and through a series of synchronicities, this wonderful 40 acres and a house that I have now.
That reminds me of, you've got a podcast series also.
Yes.
And I was listening to, I think it was episode 101 about how to forgive anyone, anything.
Forgiving the unforgivable.
Yes, that's what it was. Yeah. And you were talking about your piece of land.
Was I?
Yeah. And of how when people come and visit the land, like there's a wolf presence. And
That was the podcast about our life with the invisible.
Yes.
Yes. And yeah, my land is very magical.
That's what I listened to too. Yeah.
Yes. It's okay, very magical. It's very soulful. And there are, you know, beautiful spiritual things that happen there. And one of them was there was a spirit wolf there that my dog used to trot along next to. I saw it one day and, you know, rubbed my eyes four times and kept looking. I was like, yep, there is a white wolf trotting along next to my dog. But he's translucent, so he's not a... He's not like a mammal right now. He's a spirit wolf, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So things like that have happened there. And I saw an angel once in the woods when I was walking. I saw an angel just standing, hovering in this purple light and smiling at me. And and these are the kind of things that happen when you're not expecting it. You know, when you're really relaxed and very open and you realize a moment later, oh, I just saw that. I just saw that white wolf trotting along next to my dog. Wow. Okay. Well, that explains why he never gets lost, because he's got a friend here that brings him back when he goes out traveling, because he always got lost in the city. He was very stupid about, you know, directions. He was not a dog with good directions. In the city, we're constantly having to go out and find him in the neighborhood. But in the country, he'd go miles and miles and never get lost. He'd always come back. And people would say, God, I saw your dog's tracks way out there. I'm sure it was him, you know. And I figured, well, it's because he had his little friend trotting along, bringing him back home. So I made that up, but it doesn't hurt a thing. So, you know. I guess we get to really, you know, believe in our own spiritual experiences.
Yeah, and I think that's part of your work, is your ability to connect with the spirit world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I actually worked as a psychic for about 12 years. And when I started teaching my forgiveness work, my teacher, my mentor, encouraged me to drop that moniker because you lose half the room if you, you know, tell people that you're a psychic. That half the people go, okay then, well, I'll be going to get some more corn chips now. And they don't come back because it's just a, you know,
still
a sadly tainted word. For some people, they just don't know what, they just don't know who you really are about that. Are you interesting or weird, you know?
Yeah.
And I was very interested in serving widely, you know, serving with the forgiveness work. And the forgiveness work is so hands-on and so liberating that my teacher encouraged me to, even though if you're a psychic, it's because you're wired that way. I just have that yeah. wiring. Mm-hmm. That's a lifetime thing.
Another term is medium.
Yeah. And I don't bring that forward the first thing. You know,
yes,
people who are my students, I have a long program where people study with me for a whole year, and we do a lot of forgiveness work and life purpose work, and we study lots of interesting things. So I usually out myself with them as they sign up.
At some point.
Well, usually before they get all the way committed to the class, because it's a big commitment. You know, it's a weekend every month. It's time and money, and you know, and I want them to know kind of what they've got over here in this particular mentor. And so I let them know that I'm a sensitive, you know, and
yeah.
you know, is there anything about that going to weird you out? And usually people are kind of pleased or like, oh, I thought so, or, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they connect with your kind of a kindred spirit.
Yeah. And maybe just my general perceptivity, you know, that I'm insightful. I read people quickly and I know quickly how to make them feel comfortable and how to be their friend and, be their ally right away. People, I think, a sense that I know them better than I should, you know, for having
right.
just met or,
yeah.
you know, for not knowing each other long. I seem to know them deeply. And I've always been that person since I was a little kid. I've always, you know, seen deeply into things.
Mm. When do you think that started?
Birth.
Okay.
Yeah. I can remember. I actually think I remember the delivery room and, you know, impressions of that. And I remember just always seeming to know more about what's the real deal here in this situation than the grown-ups around me.
Okay.
And I was, you know, was puzzled about how do they not know this person needs this, or that this is what this person is really mad about, not what they're saying they're mad about. Because I was always kind of going to the next layer down of
sure.
things. So,
yeah,
it was just part and parcel of being me. And my parents were very spiritual and sensitive people. They were mystical Catholics, I like to say. So it wouldn't have been weird for me to, you know, say to my mom, you know, well, I was talking to Mother Mary about this, and she said this. You know, she would kind of say, oh, yeah, well, that sounds like Mother Mary. You know, she wouldn't say, what are you talking about? So, you know.
So you felt validated.
Yeah. I was raised on the lives of saints and mystics. I read out the entire collection of the lives of saints and mystics by the time I was 10. And so, you know, it wasn't so weird for my parents to have a little mystic kid, you know. Mm. And I wasn't too weird with it, I guess, but it was just kind of part of life.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Remember. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah. I grew up on the north side for a few years, and then I was in a suburb. It was formerly prairie. When we moved in, it was prairie, and when we left 6 years later, it was suburb. It was just built up like crazy while we were there. And then I lived on the south side as I went through grade school and high school. And this matters. If any of your listeners are from Chicago, they're going to be nodding when I say I'm from the south side. I'm a south sider. But it turns out, actually, at heart, I'm a north sider. So when I was young, I moved to the north side, and because the north side is a whole different country than the south side, whole different thing going on there. So, so I love Chicago, and I go there frequently. I have a lot of family there still.
Okay, nice. And what did your parents do?
My dad was a professor of economics at DePaul University, which is a Catholic university, and my mom was a nurse until she stayed home and had us eight kids. Wow. And she went back to nursing a little bit when we went to school.
And where are you within the eight?
I'm number one, baby. I'm Miss Bossy. I'm the one. I'm the leader. I'm the one that's had the tense, overly responsible shoulders for many years. And you know, I have my challenge as a leader. That was one of your questions on your questionnaire. My challenge as a leader is to be able to be in a party, a group, you know, a situation, and not have the natural whatever happens that people start looking at me like, now what, Mary?
Yeah. So you want to just socialize and connect.
I don't want to be a leader by default or, you know, and that's why I love being in groups that are well facilitated. Yeah. I like your groups.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Because you knew what you were doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hate being in groups that are sloppy because then, you know, I start tapping my toes and think, you know, what we really need to do here is, oh my God, she's totally losing the whole crowd here. We need to do that. Yeah. You know, so that's my challenge, is not taking over.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly. What were some of the interests as a child that you really loved doing?
I loved to be in nature. I loved to play in the prairie and look at all the little different kinds of grasses really carefully. And there was a creek then. I used to go visit and you know, find things down at the creek. And I always loved discussions, philosophical discussions. I was always like trying to get my friends to stop playing hopscotch and sit down on the driveway with me with my chalk. And, you know, I'm leading classes, you know, I'm like talking about the universe, you know, when I'm eight and trying to figure out, now, where is Jesus and Mother Mary located here? And why can't you see them? And what's this? And what's that? And where's a person's soul? And drawing pictures of people. And you've probably seen from my workshop, I'm always throwing up this picture of this personality with the soul,
yes,
you know, shining like a light over their head. And just doing a little diagram of our, you know, how we're wired, you know, body, emotions, mind, energy, spirit, you know, all that. I think I was sitting on my driveway at age eight, kind of drawing that picture, trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
And I've always loved to read. I read voraciously, and I still do. I love reading.
Is there any part of year that you end up reading more?
Let's see. Well, I read faithfully every night at bedtime for 15 minutes. Until I am like my falling asleep with my nose in the book, it's my you know, chilling out activity. And in the summer, yeah, when I go to my cabin, if I'm writing a lot, I don't read a lot because it's, you know, it's the same,
yeah,
same lot of words. But I can read and read for hours. I once got a reading injury. I read so long.
Oh,
yeah.
I've never heard of that.
I know. I didn't do it again either, but I think I was reading for 6 hours one time, and then I got up and my neck wouldn't turn for a week because I had, like, you know, just holding
stiff
it stiff for so long. I got a a reading injury. Was silly. So now I don't do that. But, you know, being self-employed, I do love how you can work with the cycle of your society and the weather and everything that's going on around you. So I usually take off the last 2 weeks of August, and I usually take off right after winter solstice. You know, I punch out on December 20th because I am not going to be working and running to stores. I'm not going to do that. And I don't get back to work till, you know, maybe January 5th. So I'll take, you know, a couple weeks to just live and, you know, tell people to, now go figure it out by yourself for a while. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
And that works?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you make your way to Minnesota?
Oh, well, frankly, because I'm a psychic, I had a very loud and clear visionary dream one night in the spring of 1977. I'd been thinking, you know, I think I'm not going to end up living in Chicago. I think I'm going to live somewhere else. I don't know where, but I think I'm going to think about visiting other places in the country. And then I kept hearing people in the wind, like in restaurants or bookstores, like talking about Minneapolis, St. Paul. And every time I heard the words, Minneapolis, St. Paul, it's like they had yellow highlighter on them and my head would turn. And I think, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Wow. I don't even know where that is, but I keep hearing about it.
Yeah. What age were you about?
I was 22.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then one night I was having this really complex and intense dream, which ended with a loud voice saying to me, I'm telling you, you need to move to Minneapolis. And I sat up and thought, I need to move to Minneapolis. I had to get up and like get the map and see where it was. I don't even know. Oh my God, that's north of here. Holy God, that's right up by Canada. Are you kidding me? You know?
Yeah.
But I had been praying to meet my mate. I had been praying to find my home, my best home. I just knew my home wasn't going to be Chicago. And that's where Fred was. And I met him on the second day. So I just cleared the decks and said, oh, you know, I'm going to take a little trip to Minneapolis, just going to visit. But I met my husband on the second day and fell in love with him. And
wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that's amazing. That's so powerful.
Yeah. Actually, I have dreams like that. I wouldn't say all the time, but I would say that dreaming is one of my, what's the word? Assets, one of my mm-hmm. tools
yeah.
for living.
Yeah.
I get real clear messages from my soul.
Mm-hmm. And it helps you process all the information you gather.
I suppose, yeah. I think sometimes when I'm teaching the workshop, I find myself dreaming and that I'm working with people at night, you know.
Sure.
I don't know if I really am working with them at night, but, you know, I sometimes wonder,
yeah.
you know. And I've actually had people come and tell me, you know, I was dreaming about you and you were being so loving to me, and I woke up feeling so refreshed and kind of healed of this thing. I'm thinking, wow, you know, maybe people travel around at night and do work in the other planes.
Yeah, I always have wondered about that myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, spirit work.
Yeah.
So children form a work ethic from their parents,
mm-hmm.
observing what they're doing and how they work. So what did you learn about work and also how to nurture the gifts that you are talking about here?
Hmm. Okay. Well, I would say from my mom, I learned that you need to just love your work and you need to love being a server of people's healing. She was a nurse and she, you know, she would just tell the stories of her and her nursing friends and things that they did that were saving lives. They were the best days of her life and they had adventures and they just threw down. There wasn't anything that they wouldn't do to keep a polio victim alive. They would stay up all night, you know, with a hand bellows, well, because the electricity was out, you know, and she was so proud of that. She's so proud of being
heroic,
and my mom was a shy person socially, but a couple of times over the years when someone died nearby in our neighborhood, she was just first on the scene and unflappable. She once walked into a holdup situation where someone had been shot, and she just walked right in and organized the whole crowd and sat down and like, kept this person alive until the ambulance came. And she was so shy, she couldn't ask for a spoon in a restaurant. But if she was a nurse and somebody was bleeding, they were going to be alive, thank you. And I feel like I have that passion with working with the people in my hands. I think, I'm going to get you through this. Nothing is going to stop me
yeah.
from getting you through this story. And I think that serves me. And my dad, he was just disciplined. He was just steady as he goes. He went down and did his papers, you know, corrected his papers. He got to the train on time and came home and, you know, got his grades in on time. He was just very, very precise and diligent and professional. So I think I learned some good basic professional habits from him.
Yeah. All right. Why don't we end this session with a few of your fondest memories as a child and in your youth?
Well, one I think that's pretty apropos to this conversation is I think from early on, I was experimenting with unconditional love and forgiveness as principles in life. Because I remember being about, I don't know, 7 or 8. And it was a time when it was a bunch of girls playing with each other, a group on the block. And girls, they just get to these they get into these snits and fights, and then they get on the outs with each other, and they gang up on each other, and they kick one girl out of the group, and they say, I don't like you anymore. You're not my friend. And, you know, these little snits that go on.
Yeah.
And I watched them do that to each other, and then they would turn the guns on me one day. They'd say, I like Debbie better than you, and you're not my friend anymore, and Debbie and I are going to be best friends, and we don't want to play with you. Mm. And I immediately went into forgiveness, and I looked at them right in the eyes very serenely, and I said, oh, well, that's too bad, because I still like you quite a lot. Okay, well, I'm going to go in the house and read. Let me know if you change your mind. And
oh my gosh, I go in the that's house. So mature.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
I go in the house, and I start reading my book, and about, you know, 10 minutes later, they wanted to play with me, and they're banging on the door, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, you guys, I'm reading right now. You know, and so I did that a number of times. And also, it was the days of the civil rights and, you know, the all the big marches and things going on. Racism was a big discussion in those days. And my friends were all very racist, as were their parents. And my parents were civil rights workers in the 50s. They were very committed to justice. And so I was always speaking when people said, you know, terrible names about African Americans. I would say, that's not right. You should not call them that.
Yeah.
Those people are people just like you. And I just stayed with my principles early on. So, and I think my friends thought I was weird, but they admired me. And so I guess that's a good memory.
Oh.
I felt proud of myself back then.
Wow, that's profoundly moving. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, we have a lot more to talk about, and so Mary will be back for a few more sessions, so stay tuned. And as well, if you've been listening, Jennifer Nelson has been having several mentoring sessions, and she's been working through a two-year creative block. And part of what was coming out, I felt like, oh, this is, I need to ask Mary.
There's nothing like a big resentment to be a big creative block. Resentments are like tar in the pipeline. They just really block your flow of soulful energy and inspired ideas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're going to be working with her on a session coming up. So, listeners, you have a lot to look forward to. So we'll see you next Monday. Mary, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks, Mike Cabea, our sound engineer. Thanks, my audience, for listening. We'll see you next Monday. Bye.